Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.
Hello and welcome to the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. I'm Josh Bell, contributing editor and film critic for Las Vegas Weekly. And joining me this week is Tasha Chemplaville, fellow film critic for Las Vegas Weekly. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So let's get started. We will begin with Eagle Eye, which is probably the biggest release this week. It's a sort of summer blockbustery kind of movie, although it's not really summer anymore. but this is... stars Shia LaBeouf, who is the hot new thing, I guess, these days.
And so
who was in Transformers and Holes, which I think is an excellent
Holes
underrated movie. Did you see that?
Yeah. I liked Holes a lot.
That was good.
He's also in Indiana Jones and the Crystal.
Of course, right.
Which
the Indiana Jones.
Movie, I
right.
Thought.
I wouldn't say it was horrible. But
really?
Anyway,
I would.
Maybe that's a separate podcast.
Yes.
But so anyway, so Shia LaBeouf, he plays this sort of slacker guy who's, of course, like got a really high IQ, even though he doesn't do anything with it. And he works at Copy Cabana, I think what they call it. And he gets a mysterious phone call from this woman who says that he's about to be pursued by the FBI because she has somehow sent all these terrorist implements, weapons, and bomb-making materials and whatnot to his apartment and transferred all this money into his bank account. And suddenly he's on the run from the government. At the same time, Michelle Monaghan plays a single mother who also gets a phone call and says the government's going to be after her. So the two of them go on the run together. They're being pursued by Billy Bob Thornton, plays a FBI agent. Rosario Dawson plays a, I guess it's like an agent of the Air Force, or their
just
enforcement
like
or something like that.
Somebody.
But anyway, both of these people are sort of chasing them down as well as trying to figure out what's really going on in this crazy conspiracy at the same time. And it's sort of, I don't know, I guess there's, like, to me at first I thought it's sort of going for like a Hitchcock kind of thing.
Yeah, that was the first comparison I drew too. But at the same time, it wasn't nearly as good as Hitchcock.
Of course not, no.
And it wasn't, I also felt like, it was a kind, they were trying to get this new technology type thing in there. It's supposed to be very, you know, fresh and a new spin on things, but I felt like they just took so many elements from other movies. Like, you know, they had The Fugitive in there, War Games even, and
right.
I felt that it just kind of seemed like the same old type of movie.
Right. It is well sort done. Of dressed up with that technological,
yeah.
You know, idea that it's all very now, and, you know, the conspiracy can monitor everyone via their cell phones or
right.
Security cameras everywhere. But yeah, at the same time, the plot is pretty conventional and pretty familiar. But I thought the conspiracy was so omnipotent and so, like, all-powerful. At one point, they're walking in the middle of this, like, deserted rural road or field,
yeah.
Or something, and yet the conspiracy is able to tap into the power grid, and some surge comes, and they knock down the power lines to kill this guy, and it's like there's nothing that they can't do.
Yeah, and now I think about it, that doesn't even make any sense. And then also, and then they had they wanted to get the surveillance video from that one convenience store,
right.
Because that one wasn't connected to a network, so that one was okay to get.
Right, but that was like the only thing in the entire movie that
right.
wasn't accessible by the
but
conspiracy.
That didn't, I mean, I felt like that. Why couldn't that one be accessible to this conspiracy that
right.
can seemingly control everything in the middle of nowhere?
Right,
which
right.
is a very North by Northwest.
See, right, and North by
that?
Right, North by Northwest, and that's and there's also the later in the movie there's an airplane that's chasing
yeah,
the characters,
yeah, yeah. Very much
which is very yeah very North by Northwest or The Man Who Knew Too Much. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, that I was reading that people have been comparing to that. I haven't actually seen that one.
Yeah,
but.
Which is these. There's actually two versions. Hitchcock remade that himself. I think once in the 30s and once in the 50s.
Oh,
but
really?
The climax of The Man Who Knew Too Much involves a bomb that's at an orchestra performance that's
oh.
going to go off related to when a certain thing is played, and that's similar to the climax to this movie. And also, strangely enough, the climax of Get Smart, the movie, which also involved an orchestra. And so apparently
yeah.
lots of people recently in Hollywood have seen The Man Who Knew Too Much.
That sonic trigger thing is
right,
new technology
exactly,
that they want to
exactly.
incorporate in every
that
movie.
That becomes ridiculous. But yeah, and I was hoping for something a little more Hitchcockian. The same director did Disturbia like a year or two ago with Shia LaBeouf.
Compared to Rear Window.
Right, which was, I thought, fairly decent.
I've seen it too.
Yeah, it's, well, I mean, it's not like spectacular, but I thought it was like at least it went through the motions well enough. But this, the more absurd it got, the more I kind of felt like it was losing the, you know, once the antagonist can do everything, then there's no real suspense to hoping that the heroes will get away, right. I think, because...
And then I think even when the conspiracy eventually was taken down, it was done in the most this most simplistic way possible. That I was just like, really, that's all it took?
Because right.
Why didn't you do this like a long time ago? Or why didn't the brother do that in the first place?
Right, the Shia LaBeouf's brother, yeah. Who is a twin brother who was part of the military, yeah. And he kind of sets this whole thing in motion. Try not to give too much away. I wish we could give more away because the ultimate explanation of what the conspiracy is, I thought, was so ridiculous that it really took me out of the movie, and it makes it even less like a Hitchcock movie or like even some like 70s thrillers kind mm-hmm. of things where it's all about the paranoia of the government, and it just turned it into something else. I won't necessarily say what, but I don't think that quite worked. So I think I gave this a 2.5 stars in my review, and it wasn't like there were times when it was sort of like chugging along in that sort of action movie vein, and it was okay,
yeah.
But it ultimately didn't hang together. I don't know if you want to.
I mean, I'd probably go about 2.5 also. I think
yeah.
I like Shia LaBeouf in this film, actually. Mm-hmm. I don't usually like him in general, but I thought he was kind of charming and entertaining, and I thought he did a good job with it.
He was, they don't really give any of the actors much to work with from a character perspective. There's a handful of moments where he's sort of grieving about his brother or whatever, and you try to get that insight, but there's so little of that, I think, that there's not really enough to construct a character. But no, I mean, he was fine.
Yeah, he
I
was
think.
Fine. I mean,
he wasn't bad.
Usually
he
just annoys me so much. But
you really hate that Indiana Jones movie, don't you?
Well, it was also Even Stevens.
Yeah. Oh.
Which I can't get over him being, Lewis Stevens and Even Stevens. So I'm probably biased that way. But he was really good in Holes, you're right.
Right, yeah.
And this one he was good in, I thought.
Yeah.
At least decent.
Right.
He didn't make me want to, poke my eyes out with my pen.
Well,
so.
that's key.
That's
an important trait.
But,
I mean, he's obviously trying to be this big, new action guy between this and Transformers and Indiana Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't necessarily. I wish there were better movies, but as far as who could be the next action hero, I would be okay with him, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, why not? I guess he's as good as the next guy.
And I like Michelle Monaghan, or I liked Michelle Monaghan once in Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang, which
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw,
that
which
was
is
good.
A great movie.
I love that movie.
And she's so good, and I don't think I'd seen her in anything before then, and I thought, wow, this actress is amazing. I got to see what she does next. And she's just done all this, kind of mainstream crap since then.
Yeah, Maid of Honor.
Right, yeah, exactly. Or she plays someone's girlfriend. She was in Gone Baby Gone, which was good, but
I
she just
that.
Plays... Well, that's a really good movie. And she plays Casey Affleck's, partner in his detective investigation business, but
mm-hmm.
basically like his girlfriend, and she's just kind of mostly in the background. So I wish she would get another movie that could showcase her
right.
like that one did, but this is not it. So, all right, well, let's move on to another disappointing movie.
I agree.
Which is Towelhead, which is a movie that garnered a bit of controversy, I guess, for its title. And sort of for its subject matter, I suppose. And it's based on a novel, sort of a coming-of-age story about a Lebanese-American girl she's got a Lebanese father and a white American mother. And she's 13 years old and moves to the suburbs of Houston to live with her father after being kicked out by her mother. And I guess it's sort of a sexual awakening slash sexual molestation film.
Yeah, I think it's an accurate way to describe it. It was kind of, I just felt like nothing really happened. I mean, lots of stuff happened, but there was no, character development. Everybody just kind of stayed the same until maybe, the very end or something. And even that, I was just like, I don't really care anymore at this point. It was also, seriously, every single guy she meets, right?
Right.
They just... all try to assault her. I was like, this is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, it was. It was a little... I mean, it
I
seemed...
I want to take advantage.
It seemed to me like it was trying very hard to be shocking and
yeah.
be, subversive or transgressive or whatever, but was very superficial, I think.
Yeah,
ultimately.
Agree.
And there's a lot of... There's not a lot of movies about, this particular minority group, especially living in America
mm-hmm.
and... movies that aren't about terrorism or something like that. And I think there's a missed opportunity here. I felt like it could have, with only fairly minor alterations, been a story about a white girl or about a black girl.
It could have been so great, I think.
Yeah.
But it just, I think it just fell short and wasn't, I keep banging the table. And it just, you know, I'm Indian, right? So I appreciate these kind of looking at other cultures type movies, and just all the characters were so one dimensional, and you know, they had one shtick, and then that was pretty much it. And you're like, okay, and none of them were likable.
No, not they a one. Really weren't. And
even the little girl, I felt bad for her that people kept taking advantage of her, but you know, as she started learning more about her sexuality, I thought, you know, stand up for yourself a little bit.
Right.
She just, every time anybody asked to do anything to her, she's like, okay, sure. I was like, really, kid?
Yeah. I mean, I will say that I thought that actress was fairly good in the role.
She was okay. I didn't even think she didn't, like, sparkle in it, you know? She was just kind of there. She was going through the motions, I felt.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I felt like there's something to the character of being, you know, the character is so timid and so unsure of herself that may be why that she sort of acquiesces to anything that anyone ever asks of her.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was conveyed fairly well. I don't know. I was also impressed. I went on IMDb afterward and looked up this actress, and apparently she's 20 years old.
Yeah. And I was happy that she was 20, because I thought that this would have, like, scarred the hell out of me if I were a 13-year-old going, you know, having all this stuff happen to me. So I was very glad that she was of age at the time.
Yeah. Although I thought she did a good job. Like, I believed that she was 13.
Oh, I totally believe she was 13. I totally believe she was 13. That's true. I'll give her that.
But not much else.
Not much else.
Yeah, but definitely disappointing. And Alan Ball, who wrote and directed this movie, of course, wrote American Beauty and was the creator of 6 Feet Under and True Blood, which is a new show on HBO and is, you know, a fairly well-respected writer. This is his first feature film as a director, but definitely not probably up to the stuff that he's done before.
I agree.
He's trying to, you know, you wonder about these, and I don't want to be sort of judgmental on this front, but you wonder if, like, you know, a white man is necessarily the best person to write and direct this movie, which is based on a novel by a woman who presumably has similar experiences. But at the same time, I don't know. I wonder if it would have been better if it was directed maybe at least by a woman, you know, if not, you know, a woman of color. I don't know. But that's just speculation.
I agree. But, I mean, I just don't think it was what it could have been.
Yeah.
I liked Aaron Eckhart in it, except for the fact that he was, you know, a pedophile.
Right. Well, he's a good pet. Like, he does
he's
well.
He's a good actress.
And there are times where you sort of feel sympathy for the pedophile. And, or at least maybe it was just me.
I won't even delve into that one, Josh.
But, you know, he makes him seem like a sort of almost real character. Like, you can almost buy into his motivations, even if you don't. Okay, maybe not.
I wouldn't say I could buy into his motivations. I mean, I could maybe understand his I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I still think the movie was very superficial and that they could have done a lot more with any of those characters to make them more real, but you know, the performances sort of helped it along a little for me, so
yeah.
I mean, I didn't think it was any worse necessarily than Eagle Eye. I'd probably give it 2.5 stars as well. I know you I think you probably liked it less.
The more I think about it, the less I like it, I think.
Yeah.
It's just, it wasn't, it was, I think they were trying too hard to be provocative and then just ended up being just kind of, there was just no real story to it.
Right.
Other than the fact that she gets assaulted by everybody she meets.
It was very unpleasant to watch and not in like a sort of fascinating, insightful way.
It wasn't like, you know, the car accident thing where you have to look at it as a tragedy. It's just kind of like, God, why is everything happening to her? And she had, like, no allies the entire time until maybe the last third of the movie.
And even that Toni Collette character who comes along and tries to help her she seems sort of self-righteous as well, and she's sort of helping in order to feel better about herself, and she's very judgmental, and I don't know.
I don't think she was judgmental.
Well, I mean, there's those scenes where she's trying to help, and the young girl is like, oh, you're not my mother, and even if she has her best interests at heart, she's not willing to sort of tolerate anything else.
But I think those were the scenes where, you know, she was left alone with the pedophile next door.
Well, right, but she kind of wanted to be left alone with the pedophile.
Right, but I mean, that's why Toni Collette was a good character, because she was, you know, a 13-year-old doesn't know that she shouldn't be left alone with the pedophile.
I guess that's true. I guess that's a good point. I don't know. Let's move on. Here's a movie that I at least thought was pretty good now. We can talk about Tell No One, which is opening exclusively over at the Village Square, which is a French movie based on an American sort of mystery thriller novel by Harlan Coben about this doctor who his wife is murdered, or he believes at least she was murdered 8 years prior, and he gets this email allegedly from her with this video of her. She's like going up an escalator or something, and it appears that it's a present day video that she's apparently now alive again. And it says, of course, tell no one. And while at the same time, the investigation into the murder of his wife has been reopened by the police because of the discovery of a couple of bodies at the site where she was murdered. And so suddenly he's now under suspicion again for this murder. He's trying to find out what actually happened to his wife. Is she alive? If so, where is she? Who has her? And in the meantime, sort of running from the police. And which is a very, like, the description of this movie actually doesn't sound all that off from, like, Eagle Eye, for example. but is executed so much better, I think.
Yeah, definitely a lot better. I really enjoyed it, actually.
Yeah.
I thought it was, you can go ahead, though.
I think that with these kinds of stories, you can easily do them in a very overblown way, with a lot of flash and a lot of focusing on action and big performances. And what the director here, Guillaume Canet, I believe, I always mispronounce people's names on this show. anyway, but what he does, I think, is he underplays it at the right moment. So there's the emotion feels real, I think. And then when you get, there's a really good chase sequence sort of in the middle or so of the movie. When you get something like that, the excitement feels genuine because up until then, it's not like everything is at this heightened level the whole time. Like at this point, there's really something at stake and he's running and it feels suspenseful. And I think I thought that was very effective. Ultimately, by the time you get to the end and the very long explanation where there's, of course, the one scene where the guy has to explain like what's really going on, the explanation for it is not necessarily any more interesting or more plausible than you would get in any sort of American thriller. Mm-hmm. But because the movie is not all hinged on the sort of the twist or the revelation of what's going on, then I think you can enjoy it a lot more leading up to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I thought they, you know, he laid out the story really well, so that you're totally invested in the characters. And then when you finally, you know, learn everything at the end, you know, it makes sense. And I didn't feel cheated at all.
Right.
I didn't feel that they were just trying to make up some kind of, you know, technological conspiracy that is omnipotent and ever present. And, you know, I think it worked really well.
Yeah. No, I agree. And this is a movie that, you know, of course, is showing only one theater. It's a smaller thing, but I think is worth people seeking out.
Definitely.
And especially, I think, a lot of people who are like, oh, I don't want to see some arty foreign movie, that this is really like, it's just a good thriller. It's not going to be, you know, boring, or it's not confusing. I mean, it is a little confusing with the explanation, but it's not confusing in the sense of being obtuse or something like that.
Right.
I think this is like a really,
it's very accessible.
You know, yeah, very accessible, sort of down the middle, but like well executed movie. And if you were thinking of going to see like Eagle Eye, which is a sort of botched.
Yeah, definitely see this one over Eagle Eye.
Yes. I think this is definitely.
I recommend this one. It's very engrossing.
Right. Yeah, it'll keep your attention, and, you know, well acted. I think the lead actor.
The lead actor was amazing.
Yeah.
I totally believed everything, and I was very, you know, interested in what happened to him.
Right. And I think he gives you that sense of not just, like, moving, you know, action from one place to another, but you really, again, unlike Eagle Eye, where they have to take a break, like, now we'll have an emotion, you know, before we get back. Like, this whole time you really have the feeling of his grief for his wife and his anger at what's going on and things like that.
And so his urgency to find out, you know. There's a lot of urgency, I feel.
Yes.
It's kind of fugitive-y almost.
It is also, a little fugitive-y. But in a good, I mean, I like the fugitive.
I love the fugitive.
Yeah.
That's why I like to compare it to this. I was going to compare Eagle Eye to the fugitive, but I decided no. That would just be a disservice to the fugitive.
That is true, yeah. Eagle Eye doesn't live up. But this would live up, I think, if you like movies like that, it's worth seeing. And so I give it 3.5 stars.
I'd say 4, why not?
Yeah, all right, cool.
It.
So yeah, so see that one this weekend over at Village Square. And then a couple other movies opening this week that I know you haven't seen. One is Choke, which is based on a Chuck Palahniuk novel who wrote Fight Club, which is one of my favorite movies.
He
wrote the novel, not the screenplay. But this movie has a similar sensibility. It's with Sam Rockwell, who plays this sort of
sex addict.
Sexy, right. He's a sex addict.
And
he works. Oh, did you read the book?
Yeah.
So did you like the book?
The book was interesting. It was good. Fight Club was better.
Yeah.
But the book was good.
Yeah. And I think this stays relatively faithful. I haven't read the book. I read one Palahniuk book, but that has not been made into a movie. But But I think from what I gathered, this stays fairly faithful to the book. Mm-hmm. And the main character, he works at a colonial reenactment park. He has all sorts of strange activities. And he has this mother who's played by Angelica Houston, who's in sort of a old folks home / mental institution. And she has dementia and she doesn't recognize him. And mm-hmm. and the movie is about he's sort of trying to find out the truth about his origins, about who his father is. And he also ends up sort of falling in love with a doctor at the institution played by Kelly MacDonald, mm-hmm. who he sort of feels emotion for the first time with this woman, and who's, of course, is completely screwed up and crazy as he is. And so I felt like, unlike Fight Club, which was super dark pretty much all the way through, this movie, although there's weird things going on and the character is a sex addict and there's a whole sequence in the last 20 minutes or so of the movie where he's got anal beads stuck in him, things like that. At the same time, it was actually sort of sweet, and it was sort of romantic, and ultimately these characters, right? Well,
you
I mean,
don't have to hear those two words.
Well, it's an alternative romance, you know. Right. But these characters, for however weird they are and however messed up they are, they have a genuine connection, mm-hmm. and they fall in love in a real way, and that was, I thought, kind of touching, you know. Mm-hmm. And some of the subversive or the sort of twisted stuff is a little less exciting, maybe because you've seen it done already in something like Fight Club. And it's not nearly as stylish visually or acting-wise, although Sam Rockwell is perfectly good. And all the actors, Angelica Houston, mm-hmm. Kelly MacDonald, who was in No Country for Old Men. But it didn't wow me, but I thought it was solidly constructed. And I liked that it had this sort of sweetness at its center. So I'll give that one 3 stars, and I think it's worth checking out if you like Chuck Palahniuk, if you read the book, mm-hmm. or if, you know, you saw Fight Club. As long as you don't expect the exact same thing as Fight Club, I think this one is worth checking. And that's also, I know it's over at Village Square. I think it's opening in a couple theaters this weekend. And then lastly, this is a big weekend for movies, actually. There's a number opening that I haven't seen, but another one more that I have seen is The Lucky Ones, which is yet another Iraq War-related movie. None of these movies have done particularly huge box office. Mm-hmm. And this one seem to be sort of downplaying. It's only opening again at a couple theaters. And it seems like the release is on a more limited level. And it's with Tim Robbins and Michael Pena and Rachel McAdams, who play these three army soldiers, and they're on leave. Well, the Tim Robbins character is being discharged from the army, and the other two are on leave for 30 days. And they get to the U.S., they get to New York, and there's a blackout. There's a ton of – this movie is just like contrivance after contrivance after contrivance to get them. So there's a blackout. They can't fly home, so they decide to all sort of go on a road trip together to drive them to their various destinations. And the Tim Robbins character is going home to St. Louis to his family. And Michael Pena and Rachel McAdams are both conveniently going to Las Vegas, where they don't end up until the very end of the movie. So it's not really much of a Vegas film. But along the way, they each have their sort of basic character arc. The Tim Robbins discovers when he gets home that his wife has decided to divorce him because he's been away for so long. And
patriotic.
Right. It's a very – well, this is a movie I think that wants to sort of pay tribute to soldiers in a way. I mean, all three of the soldier characters come off very well. They have their problems, but they're ultimately good people. And there are a lot of scenes where there's a sort of false – gratitude expressed towards the soldiers on the part of civilian characters, like thank you so much for what you've done over there, but they don't have any real empathy. Mm-hmm. And that I think is an interesting idea, but the plot in terms of what happens to these characters on their road trip and the development of their sort of personal demons and how they have to overcome their each individual problem is just full of one contrivance after another. I mean, from a hurricane that shows up for 5 minutes and is never seen again. And the two characters, this is the sort of telling, is that Michael Pena and Rachel McAdams characters drive off to go to a store or something. They leave Tim Robbins in this park by himself. And it's outdoors. Mm-hmm. While they're driving off, they get caught in the hurricane or tornado, I guess it's probably in the Midwest. And it's, you know, wind is blowing everywhere and rain and everything. And they drive back to the park, and Tim Robbins is fine. He doesn't appear to have even experienced this, you know, 3 or 4 miles away in the middle of the park. So lots of things like that.
That at least been a little windy, right?
Exactly, or something. And that really make it hard to empathize with what's going on, you know, which is a good message, you know, that they're trying to convey about the value of what soldiers are doing, mm-hmm. regardless of what you feel about the war or the difficulty for them to readjust to civilian life, which was something that they also dealt with in Stop Loss, also kind of not that effectively. And so the more the contrivance is built up in this movie, the more it really annoyed me. And so I'd only give it 2 stars. I think it's it's a shame. It's not worth seeing. And
high hopes for that one.
We're waiting still for there to be a decent, you know, Iraq war. I mean, this isn't really a war movie. They're not at war. But, you know, something that deals with the situation over there or with the soldiers or something. And this just is not it, unfortunately. So that's all in theaters. And then coming up on DVD this coming Tuesday is a kind of a big week for a couple of pretty popular movies from the summer, one of which is Iron Man, which was definitely one of the most popular.
It was very good. I think it deserved its popularity.
Yeah, yeah. I liked it, too. I think especially after The Dark Knight came along and that just sort of eclipsed everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think I liked Iron Man more after seeing The Dark Knight.
I actually thought I liked Iron Man more than The Dark Knight in general.
Yeah. No, I would agree, actually. Yeah. Yeah. I was disappointed in The Dark Knight.
I was a little, too. I feel like we're not allowed to say that.
But it's true. Yes, it is apparently the greatest movie of all time.
So people keep telling me. I didn't think it was. I thought Batman Begins was a lot better than Dark Knight.
I wasn't really that crazy about Batman Begins either, to be honest.
I love Batman Begins.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was a little disappointed with Dark Knight. But Iron Man.
Yes.
Sorry, I tend to go up top.
That's okay.
But Iron Man, I thought, was great. You know, Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark was great. I thought he really made the character three-dimensional, and he was, you know, the playboy, but he was also really intelligent, and he was funny, and he just had everything going for him, and the story was really well done, and I don't think I have any bad things to say about that movie.
Yeah. No, I liked it, and I think I gave it sort of a guardedly positive review when it first came out, and again, I think in contrast to The Dark Knight, or just thinking about it more, it was one of those movies that I felt like it did everything right. It didn't necessarily do anything more than right. You know, there wasn't anything that sort of vaulted it like, wow, this is a great movie. But it was consistently entertaining. The action was well done. The final sort of fight sequence between Iron Man and the Jeff Bridges character was a little less than, I think, as thrilling as it could have been. But no, otherwise, I mean, I would recommend this. I think, you know, most people, I'm sure, have seen this if they were interested in seeing it. But if for some reason you didn't see it, definitely rent it. You know, and I think if you did see it and you liked it, you know, it's worth checking out again. Or if you were just over the moon about The Dark Knight, you know, take a look at this. And this movie is fun to watch, which is something that I did not feel about The Dark Knight at all.
Yeah, I felt it was taking a long time to get places with Dark Knight.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one was entertaining throughout. You know, you're totally into it.
Right.
It was very exciting.
Well-paced. So check that one out. And then another movie that I think is worth renting, which wasn't actually a huge hit, but I liked a lot. Yes. is Forgetting Sarah Marshall, which I think is probably one of my favorite movies of the year, actually. I mean, which is indicative a little of how many not good movies have been out this year. But I would unreservedly.
Good.
I
think it was good in his own right.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's very funny. Jason Segel from How I Met Your Mother is the star, as well as the co-writer of this film, or I think maybe the sole writer, actually.
Yeah, I think it might be the sole writer. I'm not sure about that.
And he plays a guy who is dumped by his girlfriend Sarah Marshall, played by Kristen Bell from Veronica Mars, which is a great show.
Yeah.
That's a sidebar topic, but I love Veronica Mars. And he decides to get away and forget about her by going to this resort in Hawaii, where, of course, she ends up also being with her new boyfriend, played by Russell Brand, the British comedian, who's very funny. He just hosted the Video Music Awards. And so he has to deal with that, as well as meeting a new, much more suitable mate. In Mila Kunis, who plays the sort of receptionist at the hotel. And what I liked about this movie is that, A, it's very funny, which, of course,
helps
in a comedy. But I also thought it actually accorded a lot of respect to all of its characters. Usually in a romantic comedy, you know that Jason Segel and Mila Kunis are going to fall in love. And it's not like a secret. It's not something that has to be, you know, full of suspense or whatever. But usually in a romantic comedy, the one who's wrong for them, the Sarah Marshall character, is demonized, is sort of made very one-dimensional. And then there are a lot of scenes, or at least a few scenes.
Characters.
Yeah.
Same with the Russell Brand character. You know, he could have just been, you know, the kind of, you know, the other guy and just not had any dimension to him at all. But, you know, he was very nice, very likable. You know, I could totally see him and the Jason Segel guy being friends. You know, I thought they did a very good job in making them full characters.
Right.
They did a very good job in making them full characters.
Right. And that, I think, contributes to where you can laugh, but at the same time, you can care about what's happening and the full spectrum of what's happening, not just, is he going to fall in love with Mila Kunis? Because again, you know, duh, of course he's going to fall in love with Mila Kunis. But that they have real emotional lives, and I like that. So this is, yeah, an absolute recommendation. If you didn't see it, definitely go rent it. It's worth the trouble. And, you know, that plus Choke would be an interesting double bill with sort of off-kilter romantic comedy.
That awkward, funny stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. That would be an interesting one. So, yeah, so check those out and go see Tell No One over at the Village Square. That's the one to see in theaters this week. So, Tasha Chemplaville, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Josh.
Josh Bell hates everything!
Except me!